Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing!
Welcome to Read or Dead, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk about the world of mysteries and thrillers. This is episode 167, and we are recording on Monday, December 11th. I'm Katie McLean Horner, along with Kendra Winchester, and we are coming to you from Book Riot. Hi, Kendra. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Completing day 5 of mandated quarantine. Woohoo! Yes, I tested positive for COVID last week. Friends and neighbors, if you are able to get the booster and haven't
please do.
I did get my booster recently. I think that is what made this bout of COVID. This is my second time testing positive for COVID. But ultimately, it's been pretty mild. I had one bad day where I felt like crap. And the rest of the time has been, I'm a little stuffy, and like, that's about it. But I have been vegetating in the bedroom. And when I say vegetating, I mean vegetating. I've got all of the entertainment a person in quarantine could want. I have my laptop with access to streaming services of all kinds. I have my phone. I have books. I have my Switch. I have multiple other things on my computer that I can do while listening to stuff. But I have not exercised a single brain cell in the last 5 days. What I have been doing is I decided I needed to start from the beginning and rewatch RuPaul's Drag Race.
Of course. Excellent choice.
Yes. Because the last time I watched it, I only got through season 9 and they just started and they're on season 16 now.
Wow.
So I have gone through almost 4 complete seasons. That's, if you're keeping track, that's a little, just under a full season per day of quarantine. So I'm planning to go back to work tomorrow for at least a half day. And I'm already like warning my coworkers, like, if you hear me talk about how I am serving up COVID quarantine realness, I apologize so much. I have watched so much RuPaul over the last 5 days.
It's amazing.
It's bonkers. So, I mean, ultimately, I'm glad to be feeling pretty normal, but COVID sucks. And it's a huge pain in the butt to test positive and then be like, well, that's 5 days out of work that I'm going to need to deal with. So logistically, it's just, ugh. But so I'm guessing you have been able to be out in the, you know, in the regular world. How's it been out there?
Well, what did we even do? I think we went grocery shopping or something. Someone went grocery shopping because there's food in the house. I have been not feeling the greatest chronic illness wise. So I just sat and I've listened to lots of books over the weekend. So that was fun, I will say. I was able to catch up on a lot of things. I listened to a book that was almost 30 hours long. So.
Whoa!
Yeah, I got that done. So, my stars. You know, some of these books, you don't expect them to be that intense, but they are.
Yeah, I have listened to a couple of audiobooks before that were in the like 20 to 30 hour range. I think most of them were Stephen King. Like, I think it on audio is about 30 hours long. That's a commitment. But that sounds like you got some amazing reading time in. I was like, I can use this time to read a little bit more. But funny enough, my eyes have been tired from screen strain. that I'd be like, I could read a book. And I'm like, oh God, my eyes are so tired. But in general, over the last couple of weeks, I have read and finished a couple of books that, well, I'm not even going to say what they are because we're going to talk about them later in the episode.
Yeah.
But I have, over the last couple of weeks, I've gotten some good reading in for titles that I was pretty sure I was going to love. And I was 100% correct. So it's been good to get some reading in.
You know, whenever we're sick, at least, you know, the silver lining is audiobooks and apparently RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, RuPaul's Drag Race is always there. Blaine even kept poking his head. He's like, what season are you on now? He started watching, when I first started watching it, he kind of jumped in around season 7 or 8. So he has a couple favorite contestants. But he's heard enough from me. And he also is hearing my commentary from the bedroom where I'm just like, oh, I forgot about this person. I'm like, oh, I forgot they sent this person home early. And anyway, he's like, okay, she's feeling better. She's got a she's got a running commentary going with reality TV shows that I have already seen. So that's where I'm at right now.
Good sign of life.
Yeah, pretty much. It sounds like, well, I don't know if there are any audiobooks that you wanted to talk about from what we're currently reading. I'm skipping my portion of this since I'm going to be talking about both of the books in the main segment of our episode, but did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I think we're all set. I've listened to all of the books I'm going to talk about today on audio, so I'll add a little info about that when I mention them, but I think we're set.
All right. Before we jump in, I think we've got a TBR update.
Yes. So it is the holiday season. Everyone is frantically buying gifts. I myself have several family members I have yet to buy for. And if you are in my spot, TBR, mytbr.co is here for you. So TBR is Book Riot's book recommendation service. And there are 3 levels. You can do the digital only, where you fill out a form, and with that form, your bibliologist, who is specially assigned to you and your specific book taste, they will recommend your books, and so you receive an email with the books and why they recommended them to you. You can get a paperback version, which is new, and if you live in the United States, you can receive, or the person you're buying for, will receive paperback books, including the letter of why the bibliologist picked those books, or you can do hardback only, and then you'll have the hardback book. So you have different options for different budgets. I've gifted the digital version several times because sometimes people get tired of me recommending them books because I recommend the same ones over and over, or maybe we don't share book tastes. And so I really enjoyed that because that gives them a chance for additional recommendations. I mean, also as being my friend, people automatically get free book recommendations. It just comes with the territory. Mm-hmm. I feel like all book lovers experience that. But anyway, if you are looking for someone, a gift to buy someone in your life, check out mytbr.co. And of course, that will be linked in the show notes. So no worries trying to write it down or anything. You can go find it and start your experience with your bibliologist today.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a quick pause for our episode's first sponsor.
Explode your to-be-read pile with the New Release Index, your new best friend for finding the best new books. Curated by the book nerds here at Book Riot, it will help you keep track of the upcoming books we think should be on your radar. You can filter by genre, what's trending among other subscribers, and save books to your own watch list. And you can check out the demo at bookriot.com/new-releases. That's bookriot.com/new-releases. Happy browsing.
All right. So if you are a longtime listener, welcome back. We're so delighted to have you again. If you're a new listener, welcome for the first time. We're delighted to have you as well. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we talk about mysteries and thrillers and suspense and true crime and just about anything that falls under that ginormous, wide, all-encompassing, wide-ranging umbrella. And if you've listened to the show before, you know that this is always the part of the episode where we put out a call to our lovely listeners to let us know if you have any suggestions for future episodes. This is something that we have used over the years to help us plan future content. It lets us know what you, the readers, are, what you, the listeners, are interested to hear more of. It's a way for us to expand our own reading horizons. And it's been a really great way for us to get some inspiration when we are when our brains are tapped out and we're just literally going, what are we going to record for the next episode? It's worked out really well. So if you have any ideas, they can be anything from, you know, asking us to talk about a subgenre that we haven't mentioned in a while, talk about movie adaptations, award news, author read-alikes, true crime updates. I mean, like I said, if it's mysterious and suspenseful, probably fair game for us to talk about. So if you do have any ideas, you can shoot us an email or reach out to us on social media. We're going to have all of our contact information at the end of the show and in the show notes. So don't worry about getting it down now, especially if you're listening to this while you're driving. Don't be scrambling for a pen while you're on the road. We just always put out the call ahead of time to get those creative juices flowing while you listen. And even if you don't have an idea and you just want to say hi, there is nothing that we enjoy more than just hearing from people telling us that they listen to the show. And if you enjoyed this show and haven't done so already, hop on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review to help other people find us. And with that, it's the end of the year. We're skipping over the news segments. Not a whole lot has happened recently.
It's true.
Yeah. And we're going to jump in. This is actually going to be our last episode for 2023 with the holidays, which I knew. And then saying it out loud, I'm like, oh, wow. So we're going to be talking about our favorite books that we read this year. Yes. And for me, as I've talked multiple times, because I've been struggling with focus and sitting down to read has been very difficult for me over the last couple of years. A lot of times I'm like, I don't like calling it my best of 2023, because I don't feel like I've read enough books for me to say this was the best of 2023, but I am okay calling them my favorites. Even if I did not read as many books as I had hoped to, these were the books that stood out to me the most, even as I struggled to read more regularly. But how do you pick your favorites at the end of the year?
So I have a really bad memory. And so what I do is I have my Hobonichi Techo, which I've talked about before.
Oh, yeah.
And I print off little covers. I put them on this calendar. And so whenever I'm looking for books, I flip through my little calendar. I can see what I've read. And then I usually have like pages that I've written about them, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things I think that when you have that already set against you as an author, my sad brain, if you can create a story that I still remember, for me, that's extra bonus points, you know? It sounds very silly saying that out loud, but what that means for me is that the storytelling is really compelling. There are scenes that still stand out in my mind. Oftentimes when I listen to audiobooks, I can remember the narrator's voice and the scenes that they're performing and where I was when I was listening to those scenes. And to me, that's been really incredible. I am also somewhat predictable, so I feel like if listeners who've listened to the show for a while, that I've been on it at least, just write down right now what you think my top picks are, and we'll see if you're right, because you've probably heard me talk about them before, but I will talk about them again, because definitely well worth it.
Yeah. And for me, actually, yeah, two of the books on my list are ones that I've read in the last 2 weeks, because I had not had a chance to get to them during the rest of the year. And I'm like, no, I know these books are going to be amazing. And I need to read these because I want to be able to talk about them on the show. So I've talked, yeah, for mine, I have talked about reading a couple of them a lot, but I have actually read them now. And I was right. They were delightful. But yeah, why don't you go ahead and give us your first pick, which, I mean, I know you and I conferred about titles that we were going to talk about. But even if we hadn't, I would have guessed that this was like going to be at the top of your list.
Yeah, so we talked about it last time. I was like, I think I already know what was.
I'm like, I could probably guess.
Yes, yes. So my one of my top – these are in no particular order, by the way.
Yes.
One of my top picks is All the Sinners Bleed by S.A. Cosby. And this is performed by Adam Lazar White, who is a phenomenal audiobook narrator. If you can make a grocery list sound interesting, that means you've – reached peak audiobook narrator in my book. So this is a book like all of S.A. Cosby's books. This is about Black communities in the South. And so in this particular book, we have Titus Crown. He is a former FBI agent, but he has decided to retire for some unknown reasons. And he's retired to be the first Black sheriff in his county, which is Caron County, Virginia, which is, I think, this is like a fictional community, but I believe it's set like north of Gloucester, Virginia, which is north of Newport News. Anyway, so he is the sheriff. And as the first Black sheriff, there are a lot of people who are trying to undermine him, et cetera, et cetera. But one day, there is a teacher who was killed by a former student, and the student is shot by Titus's deputies. So he begins investigating the shooting. So at first, it seems pretty straightforward. The teacher is very loved by the community, and so it's like, oh yeah, we know why. But as Titus continues to investigate the shooting and the teacher, he discovers something much more sinister. And I want to say a content warning for violence towards children, sexual violence towards children. If that's not something that, you know, you want to read right now in your life, 100% understand. Just skip this title because there's a lot there. The description does stop at a certain point, but you get the gist, right, of what's going on in the content that Titus uncovers. And so there's this whole investigation of who is involved, how far does it go, who are the people, like, why is Titus in this town? And I feel like, you know, I've read all of S.A. Cosby's books, and I feel like this book combines the topics that he wants to discuss. Like, you can tell that S.A. Cosby wants to communicate something. He has something he wants to communicate to his audience, but also combines that with growth of his main character. And I feel like this book has done that so well. But I will say it has some of the most difficult content in it of any of his books. So again, just as a heads up. But yeah, it is a mesmerizing read for sure.
So I actually started listening to this book on audio just last week, mainly because of you, but I had a coworker last week who sat down and she was just like, book recommendation. And I'm like, or she's like, I have a book recommendation for you. I said, great. And she held up the audio version of Razorblade Tears. She said, have you read this one? I'm like, yes, I have read that one. It's so good. And she said she had listened to All the Sinners Bleed on audio, and she was so in love with Adam Lazar White's narration that, because I believe he's narrated all of S.A. Cosby's books, even though they're standalone titles. And I actually looked, I listened to an audiobook earlier this year where he did one of the characters, for a multi-narrated story. It was Anywhere You Run by Wanda M. Morris. He did one of the characters, for that audio recording. So I was like, oh my God, I just listened to him. But she loved All the Sinners Bleed, but she said, for Razorblade Tears, she was so taken with the narration and the story that she was like, it's like a movie. He does the most incredible narration. The story is, she's like, you can't stop listening to it. So yeah, so I happened to walk past this same coworker is also now newly in charge of putting up our displays. I have bestowed that responsibility upon her because I haven't had time. And we usually do this this is my display idea. We always do our homicide for the holidays display in December. And it's not holiday themed mysteries. It's just mysteries. But she had put the audio version, the CD audio version of All the Sinners Bleed on there. So I walked past and I just went, yoink, that's mine. Because the digital copy has a several month wait on it. So unfortunately, I've not been able to listen to it while in quarantine because it's on CD and we don't have an easily accessible CD player in the house. So it's still out in my car. But I did start listening to it. It's amazing. And yeah, I'm very excited to be able to share in part of your enthusiasm for this book.
I just love Adam Lazar White. And I think he is just one of my favorite narrators for point of view characters who are Black men, particularly like in the South. I feel like he does a generalized Southern dialect really well without making it too specific. So he finds that balance. And I just love his narration. So, yes, if you find anything by Adam Lazar White, it'll be beautifully read, whatever it is. But that is All the Sinners Bleed by S.A. Cosby.
All right. So my first pick is Red London by Alma Katsu, which is the second book in her Red Widow series. And this book... I will recommend, if you have not listened to either book in the series, Red Widow is the first one, Red London is the second. I would recommend reading or listening to the first one first, just so you understand some of the sub-stories going on. But Red London takes place after the events of Red Widow and follows Lindsay Duncan, who is a CIA agent, and she has a Russian asset that she needs to keep tabs on, try to get information from. That was part of the ending of book one. That's not really giving away any spoilers. She's picking up with that. But the main storyline is that she has been called in because there has been an attack on a Russian oligarch's property in London. And one of the agents with MI6 he knows Lindsay, they've had a past together, but he needs her to come in and see if she can get information from the Russian oligarch's wife, who is close to Lindsay's age. She's British. It appears that she's quite isolated from her community. And they think that this could be an effective way to get information about what's going on. So Lindsay has to go undercover, basically like infiltrate her way into this household by befriending the wife and, you know, trying to get information while maintaining her undercover identity. And what I love about both of these books, and if you've listened to the show for a while, you've heard me talk about Red Widow for sure. And you've heard me talk about Red London when I listened to it earlier this year. Alma Katsu has, I think, over three decades of experience in the intelligence community, basically. She brings so much real life detail and experience to these stories. I don't usually like espionage novels. They, for whatever reason, they don't interest me, or they just seem so James Bond-like that I'm like, okay, yeah, no. And they're usually very male-driven. Both of these stories are so grounded and have such fully formed characters and the plots that they're talking about. I'm like, this is not like, some evil Russian has stolen, you know, nuclear warheads or whatever, like that you might see in a more outrageous type of story. Like, this feels so realistic, so political, so grounded, but you don't have to know a lot about politics or any of this, or like international espionage to follow what's going on. It's just, oh my gosh, I have never found a more accessible espionage story. And this was one when it came out, I was like, I'm gonna listen to this year. I've listened to both of them on audio. They're fabulous. And Yeah, I don't usually do espionage novels. I don't usually keep up with series to the point where I'm like actively waiting for the next one in the series, but I have with these. And she, Alma Katsu, writes amazing historical horror. But if you're looking for something that's just much more in just the suspense realm, you must pick up these books. And this was one that, this was one obviously that I did not read in the last 2 weeks. I read it much earlier in the year, but I went back through our old show notes, be like, what books did I talk about in some of these episodes? Because my memory has been really bad the last few years, getting worse. And so I had to go back through and remind myself of, you know, what have I read this year? And then this one popped out and I was like, oh yeah, duh, that's the one I'm going to talk about today. I know that this was obviously an episode that you and I recorded together, but I can't remember. Have you had a chance to listen to either of these books?
I haven't. And I struggle with a similar thing. I'm not very into spies or like espionage or anything governmental at all. I could just, you know, wipe my hands of lap most of the time. But I feel like you've pitched this book so well that for those of us who share your resident, what is that word?
Reticence.
Thank you. Share your reticence and books like this. This might be one I need to pick up.
I think sometimes the best book recommendations come from people who don't usually read that type of book.
Like, especially if you're also someone who doesn't read.
Yeah, no, I vividly remember the day this was, I mean, this would have been probably 10 years ago, a coworker came to me. She read normally literary fiction, historical fiction, a little bit of romance. She came in and slammed The Martian down on my desk at work and said, you need to read this right now.
Amazing. And
that was one of the greatest gifts that anyone has ever given me. So, yes, if you like espionage novels and you have not read these, you must read them. But if you're not typically a fan of espionage novels, please take, you know, a review from someone who doesn't usually read them and going, these are spectacular. Like, if I can verbally underline spectacular for this recording, I will. Again, that is Red London by Alma Katsu, which is the second book in the Red Widow series. And then before we get to your second pick, let me go ahead and take a quick pause for our second sponsor. All right, have at it.
Okay, so when I sat down and reviewed all the books that I'd read and looked at my different options for today, the audiobook in particular of I Have Some Questions for You by Rebecca Mackay, performed by Julia Whalen, with additional performance by J.D. Jackson, stood out in my mind. I mean, for obvious reasons, first, Julia Whalen is pretty much a saint, like a goddess amongst audiobook narrators. She's just so good. I know no matter what I'm listening of hers, that I will enjoy it. And that is very rare because some narrators are wonderful, but they like, you know, are good at particular genres. Like there are particular adult men who perform young adult novels excellently because they have that youthful quality to their voice, you know? Anyway, I digress. So this book in particular is very interesting because it captures this, like, air quotes, dark academia vibe that a lot of book talk is very besotted with, but in a adult fiction kind of way. So first, we have Bodhi Kane. She used to go to the Granby School, which is this prestigious boarding school, and it really sets up all of their students for success, et cetera, et cetera. But while she was at this, you know, New England boarding school, one of her roommates, Thalia, was murdered. Now they couldn't.
Right? Pause.
She was murdered. So they never really found out what happened back in the 90s when her friend was murdered, her roommate was murdered. So she goes on in life. Now, it's years later, she's going back to her alma mater to give a special class on podcasting. She's become a true crime podcaster, and so she's going to teach like this master class to a select group of students. when she arrives, the students decide to investigate the unsolved murder of her roommate. And this really opens up a huge can of worms about what happened. And so we get like this alternating sections roughly of like her 1995 teenage self versus her current self and what's going on with that. And I just found it really mesmerizing. I listened to this book so quickly and I don't know. There's just something about the story that was completely captivating. When I read The Great Believers, which is Rebecca Mackay's previous book, it was literary fiction. In the most prestigious of ways, it was a finalist for the National Book Award. I remember attending this like finalist event at the New York Public Library, and she was there and she had a medal and it was all shiny and beautiful and it was amazing. But when she decides after doing that to do this air quotes mystery novel, respect, you know, like go do what you want to, like do what makes you, you know, your art happy, like make the art that you want to make. And I'm so glad she did, because this is an incredible literary mystery novel that was obviously one of my favorites of the year. And obviously the performances are great. I don't want to say who J.D. Jackson performs because that is a bit of a spoiler. So just know he does additional narration elsewhere. But oh, it's so good. And did you have a chance to read this? Because I know like she's like a local author to you, right?
Yes. I was going to say Rebecca Mackay. I mean, she's a Chicago area author, but she attended school at a nearby private school, not in the town where I work, but the town right next to it. And I don't know if she taught there as well. I don't believe she still does if she did. But she is very much like, anytime there's news about Rebecca Mackay, everyone in the community gets super excited. And I have not had a chance to read it, partially when you said you listened to it so fast. I'm like, that book was a doorstopper, especially for a mystery. It was 600 pages, something like that?
It's hefty. Yeah, it's close.
Yeah, it's a pretty hefty book. One of my coworkers read it. But no, I have not had a chance to, but it has been hanging around my periphery just because I work in the community that she grew up in. She grew up in the town that I work in and then attended school at this private school in the town right next to us. But, yes. So, still on my radar. Haven't had a chance to get to it because of its size, but that might be one that I can like keep, if I can sustain focus enough to like have two books going at once, maybe that's the one I just kind of keep listening to on audio on my commutes. I'll read a book at home and then just have that one keep going. And that's like my no pressure, we're getting through it type of audiobook, because I am still very interested in reading it.
Yes. And I've been thinking about this recently, about how some books, like I'm there to like exercise my brain, mm-hmm. and while other books are like a breezy walk through the park, but not in a bad way, like an easy way, but in like a you need both of these to survive, you know, yes. kind of ways. And so I really appreciate the books that are able to capture your attention and you just fly through because you're so engrossed. I also appreciate books that you really have to work for it, which is going to be my next pick, but this book was the kind that you just are mesmerized by, you are besotted, and you just have to listen to the whole thing. So definitely check out Rebecca Mackay's I Have Some Questions For You. It is fabulous.
Yeah, and actually I think all three of mine hit kind of that, just to take a quick tangential side route here. I think all three of my picks kind of hit a spot between like, you know, the ones that you have to work at and the ones that you can just kind of like fall into. Like you can fall into them, but the subject matter is one that is going to keep your brain engaged, and it's not a chore to read it, but it does keep you thinking while you read. So my second pick is Happiness Falls by Angie Kim, which I did finally finish, I think, last weekend. I had read like a third of it. I mentioned, I'm like, I finally started reading it. And then I got sidetracked for a little bit. And so I picked up this book, I picked it up again, and I was up till 2 a.m. finishing it. And I tweeted at Angie Kim already about this, but when I finished it, I cried because of the material in the book, but B, because it had been such a long time since I had been able to like stay up way past my bedtime because I could not put a book down. Like, I forgot what that felt like and what it felt like to be engaged with a story like that. Like, I'm getting a little choked up right now. It's been a struggle, trying to regain some of that reading magic. And this book did it. If you've listened to the show at all, you know that I have long been raving about her debut novel, Miracle Creek, which came out in 2019, was spectacular. I could not believe it was a debut novel. This book took that and just turned it up to 11. I just am in awe of what she was able to do with this story. So the story centers around a family, and there's the dad, the mom, and then there are three siblings. There's Mia, there's her twin brother, and I don't have the book in front of me, and the synopsis is not giving me all of the character names. I can't remember her twin brother's name. And then their younger brother, Eugene, who is autistic and has this rare genetic condition called Angelman syndrome, and he cannot speak. And then the story opens with one day, Eugene comes running home. Something is clearly wrong, but he can't verbalize what it is. But they realize, wait a minute, he was at the park with the dad. Where is he? And what started off initially as, oh, he'll be on his way, or, you know, maybe there was car trouble, becomes a missing person investigation. And they realize that, you know, that whatever happened there, Eugene probably witnessed it and has not been able and is not able to communicate that to them. So he's kind of their only key to figuring out what happened. And this book is just astonishing in terms of, first of all, Mia, she narrates the book. When I was reading this, I thought back to when a few months ago I read The Maid by Nita Prose. And the reason why I'm mentioning this book is because one of the criticisms of that story was that the main character, it was from her narration style, it was quite clear that she was, that the character was neurodivergent. Wasn't ever specified exactly how, but it's not going out on a limb to say that that the character was neurodivergent. But there were people who said that it wasn't done with nuance or anything along those lines. Mia, again, it's never mentioned specifically if she's neurodivergent in a specific type of way. That's never mentioned, but it's clear from the story that, or from the narration, that she's probably neurodivergent in some way. But the nuance with which Angie Kim conveys this character and how she conveys not only that character, but the character's understanding of herself, her brother, her family's dynamics. Like, it is all so seamlessly written. I mean, it's just unbelievable how much you can pull out of this story. And it, like, I don't want to give too much away. Plot-wise, I will say this one will come with a content warning because part of it involves a police investigation involving a minor who is nonverbal. There are the way that that character is treated during the investigation may be difficult for some people to read about. It was tough to see it kind of portrayed that, you know, that clearly of how ill prepared the court system and police investigations are designed to accommodate people who are neurodivergent or who have different communication needs, and just how poorly that they are treated by the system. That can be difficult. That can be difficult to read about. So I do give it that caveat. But yeah, just the incredible honesty and empathy in this story, and the, you know, like, there's a mystery at the heart of it, what happened to the father, but it is about the characters, it's about the family, it's about all of these dynamics. It reminds me so much of Everything I Never Told You by Celeste Ng. Maybe got a little bit more of a mystery element to it than that book did, but oh my gosh, it is just staggering. And I'm like, I don't even have words right now to really describe just how incredible Angie Kim's writing is. It is just absolutely astonishing. And I'm going to stop there because otherwise I will ramble on for another full like 10 minutes. this one, you said you did and listen to this one.
Yes, I really, really enjoyed this one. I think the protagonist's, the viewpoint character's narrative voice is so strong, and that's just enhanced by the audiobook performance. And such care went into audiobook selection as well. The brother who is autistic is actually performed by an autistic narrator. So I really appreciated that attention to detail.
Yeah. If you have not read either of Angie Kim's books, Miracle Creek or Happiness Falls, do so immediately. If you have not yet gotten to Happiness Falls, please let this be the push that you need to read it. It is just staggering how incredible this book is. And in fact, I was raving about this so much at work that one of my coworkers was sitting off to the side in our office, had put both of the books on hold while I was talking about it. There you go. So yeah, Happiness Falls by Angie Kim.
All right. So I guess it's my last pick.
Your last pick.
Is that right? We're there? Wow. Time flies. All right. So I really thought about this a lot. As we know, I am more new to horror, but one of the books that has stayed in my mind is one of my favorite books of the year, not just favorite mystery or thriller or horror book, is Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez. And this is translated by Megan McDowell. And the audiobook is performed by Frankie Corzo, one of my favorite Latine audiobook narrators. So this story is very long. It is 27 hours and 17 minutes. I think that's over 600 pages, I want to say.
Oh, that's another doorstopper.
Right? Yeah. But it's well worth it, for sure. In the Granta edition, so the UK edition, it is 736 pages. So here we are. Anyway, it is a sweeping book that will grab your attention from the first few pages. So we start during the dictatorship in Argentina. I think it's the 80s, 1980s. And a young father is taking his son north from Buenos Aires to see his in-laws. We don't know exactly what's going on, right? So we're just getting this vague impressions from the father about what he's doing. And you know him as a narrator is hiding a lot. We don't know. So we just start out. And we begin to suspect that the in-laws of his late wife are really horrible people. His wife has died under mysterious circumstances. And so he has kind of had his hand, someone has forced his hand. Now, the father is very sick. We don't know what he has or why he's sick, but this is just part of the experience. And so he's constantly like, he's having heart problems in a hotel, for example. So he tells his son what to do if he dies. And you're like sitting here like, oh my word, the trauma on this poor child. So that's the first section. And every section after, we get a different viewpoint character. And we learn why the father is the way he is. We learn how horrific his son's grandparents are. And what it does is it does a few things. One, it looks at the powerful. So the son's grandparents represent the powerful people in this dictatorship that really did horrific things to the rest of the people out of power, and the harm that they committed. But we also have an underlying theme of disability and how disability is used as a tool to marginalize people and to further marginalized, already marginalized people. And so disability appears in the book in different characters in different ways, but most of them are caused by the power that the grandparents are seeking. And I'm talking very vaguely on purpose, but it is a very engrossing book. And I will give content warnings for graphic violence towards children. And other people. So just as a heads up, that is in the book. It does feature bodily horror. That it kind of fits a little bit in that genre of body horror and et cetera and gore, that kind of thing. But this book is so phenomenal and it has so much heft to it. I feel like Mariana Enriquez captures this combination of literary commentary and the genre of horror so well. I just will read now anything she writes. There's one short story of hers that I don't own, not her first one, but her second one I don't own. So I need to get my hands on that and I will report back once I've read it. But that's so good. I can't wait. Have you read this?
No, again, doorstopper.
Okay. Can't wait for you to read it. Now take your time. Obviously, it's worth all the time you need.
Yes. And one literary technique that I really appreciate is, like you said, each section has a different point of view character, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I love being able to piece together stories based on other people's perceptions so that you can kind of come up with an idea of what happened. Like, it's one thing to have just, okay, characters from multiple points of view, or just a multiple POV book. I feel like young adult does this a lot. But it's another thing to really use it with intention and have like each character kind of form their own separate piece of the puzzle. That was one of the things that I loved. Bringing it back to Angie Kim for one hot second. That was one of the things that I loved so much about her first book is the way she layered all of these characters' points of view. And it wasn't just, oh, here's another character. Each character represented an essential part of the story. And combined, once you finished it, you had that whole piece. So when I hear about a book that does that well, or uses it with a lot of intention, that immediately gets my radar going.
It is. And I really appreciated, like, I also read, you know, Happiness Falls, and I 100% agree. I feel like all the different point of views are used to such great purpose. Like, they're not just there to capture interest, but they move, like, they're part of the whole, you know?
Yeah.
They're an important piece that completely makes sense. And one of the things about Our Share of Night is that it is jumping in time. And so we're almost getting like these large sections that are almost like novellas that overlay on each other in a beautiful way. There's a lot of mystery to this book as well. Like, you're trying to solve this puzzle. I will say, you know, as a note on the book, the only thing I have is that we do get the son's perspective, the son that's in the car in the first section. We get his section as a teenager. He has a best friend who is missing an arm. And so he learns about her arm and that he needs, you know, that he has some ableism that he needs to confront in that way about bodily difference. But he also has a lot of negative views of his dad, who is chronically ill. And I just want to flag that is the character, not the author, because it can be really hard to read as a disabled person to hear the inner thoughts, these ableist inner thoughts about his dad, who's chronically ill. But I feel like that is accurate based on the son's experience, knowing what you know about what was actually going behind the scenes when he was a little boy and like all this stuff. So very complex and layered and
very complex,
all the things. So definitely check out Our Share of Night by Mariana Enriquez. And that is translated by Megan McDowell.
All right. So my last pick, I did read this over the last couple of days in quarantine. I read probably about over 2/3 of it today alone before this episode. I knew I was going to love it. And oh my goodness gracious, this book, holy cow. If anyone who is on, or if you're on TikTok, I promise this will make sense in a minute. If you are familiar with the guy that does the red flag videos, where people send him videos, like TikTok videos of like problematic people, and he has this giant red flag that he's like running through a field, and it's like this flag's bigger than he is, and he's just running and just going, "Madam, ma'am,
yes,
sir."
Okay, yes.
That is my reaction to, like, if I could get a flag like that with the cover of like certain books, like that is my internal reaction to certain books, like just running around with a giant flag yelling at anyone who will listen to me, waving it around going, "You need to read this book." This is how I felt about this one. So anyway, this is Bright Young Women by Jessica Knoll. This was one of my most anticipated books from earlier in the year. And holy cow, it did not disappoint. It centers around one of Ted Bundy's last killing sprees. However, he is never mentioned by name. He is intentionally never mentioned by name in the story. They just refer to him as the defendant. But if you have seen even just one Ted Bundy documentary or read a book about Ted Bundy, you know it's Ted Bundy. And one of his last attacks before he was caught was attacking a sorority house in Tallahassee, Florida. And the story is told from the perspective, well, it's told from a few different perspectives, but the majority of the story is told from the perspective of one of the sorority sisters who was not attacked. She is in the sorority house when he is attacking her sisters. She doesn't realize it. She wakes up, she goes downstairs to fix something. She hears these noises. She sees a strange man pause at the door with carrying a bludgeoning type of weapon. And then he's gone. And then she's like, "Wait, what was that?" She goes upstairs, and then she finds some of the rooms, some of the girls have been attacked. And the story is not only, it's about kind of the investigation, but there's another character who she meets shortly afterwards who says, "I know who did this. This is the same person who killed a group of women in Seattle." And she said, "One of my friends has disappeared 4 years ago. She is not, her remains have never been found, but I am sure that he is responsible. And I knew he was going to come here." And so the story, and it goes back and forth. It's also told from the perspective of the other woman, the woman who comes into Florida, her name is Tina. The sorority sister who survived, who tells a big part of the story, is Pamela. And the girl who goes missing, who went missing 4 years ago, her name is Ruth. And so the story is told from Pamela's perspective and Ruth's perspective. And it's not a story of who done it. We know who done it. It's really an indictment of A, the ineptitude and of these law enforcement agencies in general, because there's a part of it about how Ted Bundy escaped from Colorado prison twice, and that was how he ended up in Florida, because the Colorado the prisons there, and the law enforcement there could not get their you know what together. But how so much of this, you know, these investigations, they're driven by men. We live in a society, especially back in the late 70s, that does not trust women to be truthful, accurate reporters of their own experiences. They don't trust women. They label them as hysterical, not worth listening to. And it shows all of the ways society, law enforcement, justice, all of this stuff fails women, and especially fails the people who have survived the trauma of an attack. Even if they were not physically, for these sorority sisters, even though many of them were not physically attacked, there's nothing for them to seek justice, to seek, you know, any kind of healing, even questions of their, like, where are we going to stay while the police are, like, investigating the rooms that are considered crime scenes? And the school's like, oh, geez, I don't know. Well, I guess you can, like, we can try to get you hotels, but there's not a lot left. And so they're just kind of, like, left out in the cold. And it's so... Read this book if you want to feel angry. do not read this book if you want to feel good feelings. But there is so much to take from this. And it's about how, like, also about how men can, you know, they will destroy women in huge ways, like Ted Bundy did. But they will also bring down women in small, nuanced, everyday ways that can be just as insidious. And it talks about how we, you know, how society hero worships serial killers, and how society and the media hero worshiped Ted Bundy in general, painting him to be this, you know, really smart serial killer, or this really smart, handsome, confident, charismatic person. And the author and the characters are like, this is a small, small man who was never anything special. And that's why he killed these women, because they were more special than he was. And oh my gosh, it is just incredible. I also was just thinking about Anne Rule's book, The Stranger Beside Me, that I've read a couple of times, about her relationship with Ted Bundy before he was arrested. But I think back to how she said she continued maintaining a relationship through letters with him after he was captured. And I'm just like, why? How? I don't understand. How can you, like, anyway, I'm going to take this episode into like 2 hours if I keep going on that route. But this book is a knockout, and it is on so many, not just best mysteries and thrillers of the year, but best books of the year, period. Holy shnikes. I am sorry it took me so long to read this, but this will knock you over with a sack of bricks, and it is so incredible.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I am just overflowing with admiration for this book. And I want to run down the streets with the flag, sir, madam. So please don't make me do that. Please go pick up a copy of this book, and that is Bright Young Women by Jessica Knoll.
Well, those are our favorite 6 books of the year. We did it. I can't believe this is 2023.
Oh,
I know.
I haven't finished my holiday shopping.
I have not either.
Okay.
Well, I am so excited that we've been able to do this, and that it's been another great year. And that's our show for today. Thanks so much to everyone for listening, and thanks so much to our wonderful sound editor, Caitlin Brame, who always makes us sound wonderful, and for editing this especially long episode. For the show notes and for all of our book recommendations throughout the year, you can head over to bookriot.com/listen. For more book recommendations and bookish goodness, including the newsletters, which Katie and I write, head over to Library and Nonfiction Newsletters if you want more of us. You can head over to BookRiot.com for that. And don't forget to check out all of the different podcasts that Book Riot has. There are so many good ones. All of them are good, obviously. We love them. And head over to BookRiot.com/listen, or You could just search Book Riot on your podcatcher player of choice. Yes, whatever you were listening to this on, there's probably like a homepage for Book Riot. It's beautiful. I love these new updated apps, but I digress. If you would like to send us an email with feedback or show suggestions, you can reach us at redordead@bookriot.com. Otherwise, you can find me, Kendra, on Twitter and Instagram at KD Winchester. You can find Katie on Twitter at KT_library lady. And we will talk to you all next year.
Bye.